Record. So thank you all for being here. I really envision tonight as being a dialogue and an open guided conversation about motherhood, whether we're in the thick of it, whether we've been through the hardest parts of it, maybe it's still hard as a grandparent, I don't know, whether it's something that we are, God willing, anticipating. I hope that there will be something in here for all of us. And the idea is I'm going to present five different kind of points to elaborate on, but I really want it to be open for conversation. So maintaining you in motherhood. So I was thinking about like maintaining my identity, maintaining my sanity, maintaining a lot of things, maintaining ourselves, maintaining our well-being, physical, emotional, and otherwise is what I think of when I think of maintaining you during motherhood. And I need to put out the disclaimer that I always put out in my professional role. I do a lot of parent classes and I always say to any parents that I talk to is that I am learning this like we all are, and I am not here because I am an expert or because I have figured it out. Many of you know me personally and you know that I have not figured it all out yet, and I'm just like everybody else. And so I think the points that I'm sharing are just, you know, things that I pick up and learn along the way, and I always like preparing things that I feel like I have what to learn from, and maintaining myself during motherhood is certainly one of them. So I was excited when Emma asked me to do this. So I want to start with this idea. There's an article in the New York Times back in 2020 titled "Mothers Don't Have to Be Martyrs." And there's a lot of talk about this idea of motherhood versus martyrdom. And like, how much is it like just us, you know, doing everything because we need to do it and being martyrs versus like embracing motherhood while still maintaining our own identities. So I want to start with this quote from this article as food for thought to get the conversation started. Martha Beck, PhD, a sociologist and life coach, has spent more than 20 years teaching women how to break free from society's pressures. In her book, Breaking Point, Why Women Fall Apart and How They Can Recreate Their Lives. Anyone read that book? I haven't read it. Dr. Beck wrote that the suffering that some women feel boils down to contradictory and irreconcilable values. Dr. Beck wrote that, quote, on the one hand, the good woman should be willing to sacrifice herself for the benefit of her family. On the other hand, American women are taught to pursue their dreams, and excel personally. She goes on to write that women in our country have been given the impossible task of reconciling the irreconcilable value system of the entire culture, end quote. So thoughts about that quote, about on the one hand being willing to sacrifice ourselves for the benefit of family, on the other hand being taught to pursue our dreams and excel personally. Anyone have any opening thoughts on that idea?
I think about that every day.
Yeah.
I think we all could relate to that.
Yeah. Yeah. And if you're doing, you know, if you're with your kids, then you're thinking about your other responsibilities, be them professional, communal. And if you are at work or doing something at the grocery store, you're thinking about the things that you need to be doing at home. And there's like always this, I guess we could call it a tug of war that we feel, right, in our dual and multiple roles that we have. So I want to talk about five ways that we could think about maintaining some semblance of normalcy while we play this tug of war, because the tug of war exists. And so I think we just have to embrace it and figure out how we maintain a sense of self throughout. So the first idea that I want to talk about, and I'm very happy I got the sources down to one sheet, and it's not heavy on the sources, but there are some to guide our conversation because it wouldn't be a newly share without some sources. So the first idea that I want to talk about is the idea of filling our buckets. Has anyone heard of the book, like the bucket filler, the idea that, you know, the kids' book about like deposits, right, and how we want to make people feel better by depositing in their own bucket? So I don't know if the same mashal or analogy exists for us as moms, but I'm deciding to go with it and to say that we are giving, giving, giving all day, right? We're giving to our children, to our spouses, to our jobs, to our community, to whatever we involve ourselves in, we're giving. And as important it is to give, we can't pour from an empty bucket, from an empty jug. So we have to figure out ways to fill ourselves so that we have what to give to others. And filling ourselves can come from a bunch of different places. What do you do to fill yourself? We could go around this table and all say different things we do to fill our buckets. Anyone have examples of what they do? Manicures, yes, absolutely.
Yeah,
eating dinner at normal times, eating food at normal
times. Yes, satiating ourselves physically. Whether it be with, like, I saw this funny reel that was, like, behind, did anyone see this? Behind any mother who serves macaroni and cheese is a mother, like, wolfing down out of the pot, right? So, like, whether it's feeding ourselves in a well-balanced way, Jesse could help us with that, or wolfing down the wacky mac, right? It's making sure that we're eating. What else do we do to fill our buckets?
Actual time, you know, with the spouse, or watching the
going to
movies,
going
what?
Mindless television.
Right? Sometimes we have to turn off. Exercising, reading a book. We have to find the things that work for us. And if we think this is just this new age idea of self-care, I'm here to say no, it actually comes from the Torah. I need a source sheet, so I'm going to share one with you. So, is there extra? Great. And I'm going to do it outside, but if for those of you who like the sources, you'll have them inside. And this is source number one, and it comes from a Gemara in Bava Metzia, the famous story of the conundrum of two people who are walking in the desert with one bottle of water. You guys remember this story? There's two people walking with one bottle of water. What are they supposed to do about it? Right? Ben Petur in the Gemara says, better that they both drink and die so that one will not need to witness the death of the other. And along came Rabbi Akiva. And anyone remember what Rabbi Akiva says about this situation? What they're supposed to do? The person who has the water, right, is supposed to drink the water. And he says the idea of chayecha kodmin l'chayei chavarecha, that your life comes before the life of another. And he develops this idea of chayecha kodmin, that your life comes first. Same concept and idea behind when we're on, you know, the airplane and they say, before you put on your child's life vest, put it on yourself, right? Like, your life comes first. God forbid a million times, we should never be in the literal situation of our life needing to come first. But the idea, I think, applies here, that when it comes to taking cares of others' lives, we also have to put ourselves first and take care of ourselves. I found a quote in an article by a Rabbi Reichman, who I didn't know who he was, and upon further Googling, I found out that he is actually from Chicago, Rabbi Shmuel Reichman. Have you guys heard of him? And actually has something to do with the Wayukola, which I had no idea. But anyways, he develops this idea further and says the following. He says, the fundamental prerequisite for giving is that you must first have that which you want to give. In order to contribute to this world, you must first build something worth contributing. In order to truly love others, you must first love yourself. The first step of life is building internally, developing your own skills and gifts. This means building your mind and inner world, developing your beliefs and convictions, your understanding of Hashem and His Torah. Simultaneously, we must build our mitos and personality, work on our self-discipline, and craft the ideal lifestyle to maximize our potential in this world. Only then is it possible to expand outwards and contribute to Klal Yisrael and the world as a whole. Balance between taking care of our needs and the needs of others. So this idea really is based in the Torah, that in order to give to others, in order to impact, you know, our immediate world and our bigger world, we have to take care of ourselves. And that's really hard because there's a lot of demands. And I don't know if there is a secret recipe to figuring out how to do it perfectly. If you figured it out, then please share it with the rest of us. But I think even that awareness and allowance of taking time for myself is actually benefiting those people in my immediate arena is important to keep in mind. So I found this exercise that, if you will indulge me, I'd like to do with all of you. It came from a book by Hannah Weisberg called, forgot what it's called, something about motherhood. I'll look it up if you want to read it. She had this little exercise in there, which I thought was cool. So you can tell I'm a teacher because I bring utensils with me. I'm going to guide you guys through this exercise. If you don't want to do it, you don't have to, but it's a little bit of a self-reflection. There's pens you can pass out. No, I bought them today. I was at Walmart. I said, I'm going to buy pens. I keep giving everyone. Okay, so on this sheet, you have, yes, more pens. There are 11 categories of time usage, okay? So what I want you to do, no right or wrong answers, read over the list, and choose what are your five highest priorities. One being the highest, five the least. Again, if like they are in the same area, that's okay. But really thinking about what are your priorities in terms of how you want to be using your time. Yeah.
So as wanting, not needing.
Wanting, hoping, striving.
Okay.
in the best version of your life and self, how would you want to be using your time? And nobody, you don't need to share. This is personal. We'll just use it as a conversation starter.
I'm stuck.
Hmm?
I can't open it. So it wasn't just me with one hand.
I couldn't open it. They're cheap pens from Walmart, I'm sorry.
Did you get it? I literally just got it from Walmart.
They were the cheapest ones.
Are you doing it?
Yeah, it's hard.
And then my follow-up
question is, looking at your priorities, how does that match up with your reality? Anyone want to share? How does your It's hard to separate. Okay, I didn't intend to depress anyone with this list. It's only meant to be used as a source of reflection. But I think the idea is that sometimes, you know, life gets busy and our priorities or what we would hope for doesn't necessarily always match up with the reality. And I think perhaps something we want to strive for, keeping in mind the idea of Chayecha Kodmin and really prioritizing ourselves as mothers, as women, as givers in our community, is to work towards, right, the goal of prioritizing the things and making time for the things that we hold to be valuable to us. And I heard this interesting idea. I don't have a source for us, but if you think of the word ima, it's very closely connected to ima being mother. It's very closely connected to the word emet, being truth, right? And there's this idea that when we're true to ourselves and when we're living with an authenticity that feels real to who we are, we're able to automatically live in a healthier space because we're not trying as hard to be somebody that we're not. Right. And I think that is something that comes like with time and maturity, you know, recognizing who we really are and not feeling like we need to be somebody for somebody else, even though we all have that pressure in our lives. But the idea of the closer we live to our truth, to what our priorities are, the easier life is. Now, we know life isn't easy, but just keeping in mind the idea of Chayecha Kodmin and the idea of Ima connected to Emet. As the fourth source of prioritizing ourselves and our needs. So before we go on to the next one, any thoughts? Again, I really would love for this to be a discussion. Thoughts about how we do that, things that get in the way, where this lands. Yeah.
I feel like in the process of trying to focus on finding ourselves and doing self-care, whatever that is, we can also feel like we have to be perfect and have a perfect answer of what self-care is for us or what works for us. And everything is in flux as we grow as mothers, as we grow as people, and we're allowed to pivot.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Absolutely. And what works for us today might be different, you know, tomorrow. And I can certainly remember, like, you know, if my first two are like very close in age, and like when I think back about it now, that time was like a total blur because I think I was just on autopilot. And you know, some of you might be in that stage now, and I don't even know if I thought about like self-care then, but I realized I probably wasn't like a happier or, you know, better version of myself than I was when I was able to find the time for it. And I think maybe sometimes there's too much of a pressure about self-care because we're like, when am I supposed to find the time to do that? You know? So it's a hard balance to figure out.
Yeah, I was going to say it's a really hard balance to think like when is it too much? Am I taking too much time for myself, or like, no, I need this right now.
Right. And obviously I'm going to get into this a little bit later, but you know, the influence of social media and comparison and
seeing,
oh, good for you.
On WhatsApp, 1 year down, many more to come.
Wow.
Best decision ever. Sorry.
That's impressive. No.
I was never an Insta person.
That's impressive.
I got off Facebook and LinkedIn a year ago, and it's been the best thing. Mind you, I watch Netflix, so don't worry about that. Okay? What's that for? Just.
But you have, it's important to know, like, what
that
you...
That was why.
Right.
I was specifically depressed
every time I went on.
Right.
Because I was jealous of everyone.
Yeah.
And I said, I can't do this anymore.
Right.
It's literally destroying me
yeah.
as a human being.
Yeah.
And believe me, I thought I would never find out about anything. Oh, believe me, when you need to find out, people let you know.
That's what very inspiring.
Is still communication. Email is still right. a thing. Calls are still a thing. Oh, and texting, too.
Yeah. I don't know who said this. It's not a Jewish source. It's just a known saying that comparison is the thief of joy, right? Like when we compare ourselves to others, it robs us of our own joy because there's always the thoughts of, well, they have this better or that looks better or why can't I be like, right? And so for some people, it's getting rid of it. And for other people, it's like kind of figuring out what their gedarim or kind of boundaries are around it. But I do think that that is another challenge that we have, especially when it comes to prioritizing self and self-care and figuring out how do we do it all, like the person on Instagram that looks like they know how to do it all, but nobody knows how to do it all. I'll tell you a quote now that I was going to save for later, but I thought it was great. I recently was at the Prisma conference, an education conference, and one of the keynote speakers was Tal Ben-Shahar. Your husband was there. Tal Ben-Shahar, is anyone heard of him? He's like the professor of happiness at Harvard. And like he started with a class of two and now has the most popular class at Harvard. And his topic was very simple. It was just about how to be happy. And what was cool is clearly he knew who his audience was. And so he brought in plenty of Torah sources, which is always pretty neat. He's Jewish, Tal Ben-Shahar. But he talked about social media. And he said that social media is the great deception, which leads to the Great Depression. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was so powerful, right? Like someone posts something on Instagram, so you also want to post something that looks whatever. And we all know there's like the Instagram versus reality type thing, and that the Great Deception leads to the Great Depression. I was like, wow, that's very true. So I don't even know how we got on that. But yeah, just thinking about that idea of the impact of social media.
The other key thing about self-care, people need to remember, self-care can be the smallest thing, but you need to realize and like say, okay, today's been a crazy, crazy day, whatever it is, but the 3 seconds that I'm just sitting in my car and just taking a deep breath or hiding in the bathroom or whatever thing is, that does count.
Like, yes.
Like, it doesn't need to be an expensive thing. It doesn't need to be
that. Very good.
It doesn't need to be this or that.
Yes.
Sorry, I'm a highlight of my mom. So we
good
talk
for you.
About all these things.
And yeah. Whatever.
So, like, it's something, but, like, sometimes, especially young mothers, like, you're new, like, you have to realize that, like, it's okay. You don't have to do expensive, fancy things. Like, it still counts.
I love the bathroom tactic, because that's, like, a no-fly zone. I'm in the bathroom. You can't come in, usually. They do come in anyways. Once they get a little bit older, maybe they understand. I don't know, but, yeah.
I was going to say that, too, though. That doesn't have to be, like, a whole big self-care thing. It can be, like, leaving your kid in the crib for another 20 minutes. You can just finish an episode of something and chill.
Yes.
Or have lunch with a friend or something small. It's going to be like a huge thing.
Right, right, yeah.
Mine was taking a steam shower for 3 extra minutes.
Perfect. That's awesome. Yeah, that sounds great. Okay, so that's filling ourselves, which I start with because I really do think it's the most important. The second one, I think just this mindset that I think helps us get through challenges, because we know in life there are plenty of challenges, is an attitude of gratitude and looking at things through the prism of being grateful, even though that's really hard. You know, there's this idea of when the going gets tough, the tough keep going. And I think that gratitude, grounding ourselves in gratitude and being thankful, is something that really can help guide us through that. It's a vehicle that really helps move us forward. And we learn about gratitude first. I'm like going to be a teacher and test you. Who knows where we first hear about gratitude in the Torah? Does anybody want to guess?
It is
on source number 2. If you remember the story of Leah and Rachel, right? They were both the wives of Yaakov. They both had their fair share of challenges. Leah being always wanting to be loved by Yaakov when he really preferred Rachel. And Rachel going through many years of being barren and just wanting children, right? And there's, I read recently, I think it was Rabbi Ephraim Goldberg who said, if you think about how their lives ended, Leah, all she wanted was to be connected to Yaakov. Where's Leah buried? Next to Yaakov in Maras HaMachpelah. Rachel, all she wanted to have was children. Where is she buried? on the side of the road, Rachel Mevakal Banea, right? That Rachel cries for her children, and she's Mama Rachel. She is the epitome of a mother. So in the end, it worked out for them, so to speak. But when we think about Leah, Baruch Hashem, was able to have children, and she had many children. And when she had when she had Yehuda, the Pasuk says in source number 2, Vatahar od vateled ben, she was pregnant again and she had a son, Vatomar, and she said, Hapa'am oda es Hashem, this time I will thank Hashem, al ken karach shemo Yehuda. And therefore, because of this idea of gratitude, odela Hashem, Yehuda, she called him Yehuda. Why did Leah thank Hashem only now after she had Yehuda? Does anyone remember why at this point she decided to thank Hashem? Yeah.
She had more of her fair share of
the child. Exactly. It was more than she thought. And the Gemara in Masachet Brachot in source number 3 tells us, Miyom shebara hakadosh baruch hu et olamo, from the day Hashem created the world, lo haya adam shehodala hakadosh baruch hu. There was not a man that thanked Hashem. Now there's a lot of sources that go into how is that possible? Wasn't there anyone that thanked Hashem first? But the Gemara says, ad shebata Leah vehodata shenemar hapam oda has Hashem. So the Gemara says that Leah was truly the first person to thank Hashem. And we see from here the importance and the significance of living with gratitude. That it's important to live with this attitude of gratitude. There's an interesting idea in Bereshit, when the world was being created. If you look at source number 4, it says, Vayikra Elokim la'or yom, right? Hashem called the light day, v'lachoshech kara laila, and then to the dark he called night. And that was the creation of the first day of light and dark. And the Zohar says that we can learn from this, that we can choose to turn darkness into day by the light that we infuse into it. And it's our challenge to try to bring light and joy and positive affect to whatever season we are in. And sometimes that's really hard. So there's a lot of ideas of how we can be grateful and have gratitude in the secular world. I think grounded in Torah is this idea of gratitude journals. And you see like a lot of people starting their day by like naming their gratitudes and what they're thankful for. Of course, in our religion, we start our day with Modeh Ani. Tal Ben Shachar had a great point about this too. He said, why is it Modeh Ani, thankful am I, and not Ani Modeh? We start to be thankful before we think of ourselves. We're grateful before we are we, right? We open our eyes and we start the day with thankfulness. And this is where I wanted to talk to about this idea that Tal Ben Shachar also said about social media. Because I think that when, with the whole social media, that we feel less grateful perhaps and more jealous sometimes, right? But how can we increase our attitude of gratitude, or how can we really adopt that mindset when we are dealing with a kid with a temper tantrum or a explosive diaper or cleaning up for the millionth time? Like, how do we stay grateful in those moments? Yeah.
So, when I do suffer, sometimes it's more rushed than others, and sometimes it's much more perfect than other days. But I try it when you say modern enough to like stop and think of 5 things every day. And it can't be the same as the day before.
Well.
I'm thankful for. And also, when I've had explosive diapers to deal with, and they really have been horrific, like murder scenes, it's easier said than done, but I didn't get pregnant easily, so in those moments I'm like, okay, I really try to be like, oh, thank God it's this, that rather than
that. Yeah. So, yeah. Yeah, I think that's really important. Thank you for sharing. Other thoughts?
I think like reframing. Similar to what you said, but like reframing the idea of what you're doing. So like it used to be the bane of my existence to like on a Sunday stand and make lunches. But instead of thinking this is so annoying and irritating and it's taking a lot of my time and I could be chilling or resting, whatever, I try to like reframe it as I'm so excited to be like nourishing their bodies. Or yeah. It's nice to be able to, you know, make it look pretty. As opposed to, this is like sucking the time out of me.
Right.
Sometimes it's easier than others.
Of course.
But if you like reframe it to a positive, then it's like an easier task.
Yeah.
To do.
And we're human, so it's not always going to work. And there will be, I should speak for myself, there will be plenty of times where we'll be more annoyed than I will be grateful. But I think, again, it's like just keeping these ideas floating somewhere between our subconscious and conscious of like, oh, okay, wait, I can turn this into a moment of being grateful. And I think that, and I don't know, maybe it's not always the right way to go, but I think that sometimes when we're dealing with a meltdown or a tantrum or things that we know will pass, when we think about the bigger picture and, you know, tragedies and things that other people are dealing with and things that are going on in the world, you say, Baruch Hashem, you know, it's just this and nothing more. And I think that something that I definitely keep in mind is like, Gamzeya Avor, this too shall pass, you know, for positive and negative. It's like, okay, the tantrum will pass, we'll get through it, but also like this stage is going to pass and I should really enjoy it while I'm in it. And that's really hard because we probably 9 out of 10 times feel like we're just going on autopilot, you know. But I think gratitude connects this idea of mindfulness and just trying to stay present and in the moment, which is definitely something that I am working on because I think that's a challenge. Any other thoughts about this idea of gratitude?
I've kind of,
yes.
With a child with ADHD who's just kind of all over the place, I've looked at it as a good thing for myself that I've seen my own creativity in trying to like figure out how to like maneuver around certain things with the many symptoms of ADHD. So like thinking about it in that I have a moment to like actually figure this out, sometimes very quickly, sometimes I have a little more time to think, but realizing that I can be creative in the moment can sometimes be like a reframing where I'm like, oh, okay, like I can figure this out. Like I've got it.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And that self-talk. And I think another idea connected to gratitude is this idea of having an Ein Tov, having a good eye. I think we talk about this concept a lot when it comes to just like our general Bein Adam L'Chavero and how we relate to other people. You know, there's I think it's a Midrash that talks about how if we have an Ein Tov when we go up to Shamayim at 120 Be'ezrat Hashem, you know, if we've had an Ein Tov in our life, then the Malachim, you know, welcoming us into Sha'arei Shamayim, will look at us with an Ein Tov. If we're people that looked good at others, they'll look good at us. And if we've been people that have kind of had that Ein Ra and that negativity and looked at people negatively, they say that we'll be judged that way as well. So I think that looking for the good, not just in other people, but especially in our spouses and in our children, is also really important. And this is getting off on a tangent, but in my work, I do a lot of professional development and parent classes around this concept of collaborative problem solving, which we can talk more about another time. But the whole idea is that kids do well if they can, that everybody is trying their best, and that if a child is struggling, like really struggling, there's skills that he or she really needs to be able to be more successful given whatever expectations we have of them. But the idea that everybody is just trying their best with the skills they have, I think we would all agree that as mature adult human beings, there are things that we are good at and that there are things that are harder for us. And if we have short fuses sometimes, or we yell or we lose our patience, like none of us are saying, oh, I'm so glad that happened. We all wish we could do better. We all wish we could have do-overs in those situations. And I think if we think of our kids as like, they're not giving us a hard time because they really want to ruin our day, but they're struggling with something and something is going on. Kind of keeping that attitude in mind, I think, helps us get through those harder moments. And again, helps us maybe not maintain our identity of like who I am Tamar Shamas outside of marriage. But I think in that case, maintaining a sense of who I want to be in terms of what kind of mother I want to be. Any other thoughts about gratitude, keeping positive? Okay. The third one, which I think also connects back to this idea of motherhood versus martyrdom, is the importance of asking for help. I think that a lot of times we feel like we can just do everything on our own and we're superwomen, but as I've definitely learned, it's important to ask for help, and to ask for help from whomever we can, however we can. And that doesn't mean that we need, you know, full-time babysitters all day. It's, you know, tag teaming with a friend and saying, you know, I remember we lived in Berlin for a year, and I had one little baby, and I was pregnant, and my husband was gone all day, and nothing is open in Germany on Sunday, and it was freezing, and it was really depressing, and I just found myself, like, all week being, like, dreading Sunday, and I was like, why am I doing this? And I called a friend who I made from Manchester, and I said, Sundays are really hard for me, like, could we get together, you know? And so I would bring my baby to her house, and our kids would play, and we would talk, and, like, it made the day so much better for me. And I don't know, it took me, like, half my time there to figure out, like, I need help because I'm just in such a bad mood, and I'm not a good mom, and I'm not a good wife, and I need to do something about it. And that was, like, a creative solution in that situation that didn't cost money, and I didn't need to hire somebody, but it was just, like, reaching out and saying, this is hard, I need help. And I think that we're all in this, you know, in a positive way, but the challenge of raising young kids or anticipating having kids and leaning on each other for support is also extremely important. And I think being vulnerable enough to say, I need help, this isn't always easy, is really important too. And we learn that, again, because everything is rooted in Torah, from Moshe Rabbeinu in source number 5. Moshe, first of all, we know that Moshe, even before he was tasked with taking Bnei Israel out of Mitzrayim, and Hashem came to him in the snan, the burning bush, and said, like, you're my guy, I want you to help me. And he said, like, no, not me, I'm not interested, right? He didn't have the confidence in himself that Hashem had in him. And of course, we know that he did do it, and he did it with help from Aaron, his brother. And we see very clearly in the Torah that he asked for help. In source number 5, Moshe says, Va'omar alechem be'etahu le'mor. Moshe said to them in this time, Lo uchal levadi she'etotchem. I cannot bear the burden of you by myself. I need help. Literally what we probably say about our kids sometimes, whether we're asking for help from our spouse or from a parent or from a babysitter, like, I can't do this alone. I need help. I think that this is a source that speaks to us as mothers, that says, we need help, and it's okay to ask for help. The Chovot HaTalmidim, I do not have a source for this, but when I was asking my husband, I was like, where are there sources in the Torah about people needing help? He says the Chovot HaTalmidim talks about the idea that in order to achieve anything, in order to accomplish, you have to be able to connect to other people and rely on other people to help with your own accomplishments. So what are your thoughts about asking for help? Do you think in our day and age it's something that we do easily? Do you think it's something that people are embarrassed about?
Not embarrassed
to ask for help.
Ask my husband for help.
Okay.
But, like, sometimes I do feel bad. Like, I know he has other things to do, but I really need his help, or
yeah,
I need to get something done.
Yeah, absolutely.
God, I think sometimes it's hard to ask for help if it's not your spouse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of people, both Jordan and I, are not from here.
Right.
But I'll speak to myself, but I know we've spoken about it. We have no family here.
Yeah.
And, like, a lot of people in Chicago have their grandparents, their parents down the street.
Right.
And inbuilt babysitters, and it's very different when you and your spouse are not from that city.
Yes.
And don't have any help. So your friends that you make definitely become like family. Definitely call them Gedalia to help with them. And they're like a leaky sub-pump or something. I think, you know, when my husband was away, so.
Right.
On the flip side, it's nice when those friends know that you don't have family and, like, are proactive about asking you for certain things, you know, like for a mikvah, like Pesach or Rosh Hashanah, when
right,
there's, like, big family
right
holidays. So it's nice to sort of, I'd be fine asking to go places, but it's nice when those friends,
of course,
preempt that.
Yeah.
But sometimes it can be, like, awkward or embarrassing, especially when you move somewhere.
Yeah. And I think that's an important sensitivity for us locals to remember about people that don't live here and might not have that, you know, extra support network.
Right.
Absolutely.
And what I found is the flip side is that sometimes, like, it's doing the extra. Basically, when I moved here, nobody invited me over, so I started inviting people to me. Like, it was just, like, the flip. I was like, I could be depressed and be upset and nobody's invited me, or I could go the opposite and be like, no, I'm going to invite people. I may make a very simple Shabbat, and I may not make, like, a crazy meal or whatever, and it may be, like, very simple, but, like, the people enjoy it. Like, she can tell you. Like, it was nice. She had a great time. Whatever. But the point is that, like, I just, like, felt weird, like, because I didn't know people so
right,
well, that, like, just asking random people, like, I'm not going to do that. So,
yeah,
like, the opposite. It's, like, the flip.
Yeah.
You know, and then And then in the past, I've had where she said, like, friends who, like, become your family. Like, I literally, like, had a friend who just, like, would always text me and just check on me. Like, always. She lived 2 hours away. But she just knew that, like, I just needed an extra whatever here or there. And she was, like, just like, once in a while, just be like, okay, do you need something? Like, what's going on? Like, whatever. Not in a mean, nudgy way, but, like, I care about you. I worry about you. Like, just, I want you to know that I'm here for you. And it just always made me feel, like, so loved. Because, like, in that situation, like, I didn't have anybody. And, yes, she was 2 doors down, but, like, it was not just that. It was, like, the care.
Yeah. And you just reminded me of something. I feel like we all kind of saw that during COVID when, even if we had family around, we couldn't see them. And we were literally all, like, on our own in our little bubble of our immediate people that we lived in a house with. And I just remember, like, if some, I don't, whatever, depending on the period of COVID, if someone was, like, going into a store or whatever, I was pregnant then, so I wasn't going into stores. And just people reaching out and saying, like, hey, like, what, like, there was a group, you know, you would just text people, do you need something from the store? I'm doing a Walmart pickup order. Do you need anything? Like, I felt like, yeah, you feel that support. And I think knowing who your people are and knowing that there are people that are there for you, even if you don't need to call them, is very comforting to know that there are people that you can call on if you need them. And I think that, again, I will only speak for myself in those moments when I feel like, no, I can do it all. I'm too proud to ask for help. I just end up becoming a martyr and just not being the best version of myself, because either I'm burnt out and I take it out on my husband who doesn't deserve it because he offers to help, but I'm just deciding I should do it all on my own. I don't know if anyone can relate to this, but, okay, thank you. I feel better.
I've had to let my husband do the dishes without two hands. I'm just going to look the other way.
Exactly. And you have to, right, that's this
I
is,
did it perfectly.
The problem, that's the problem, and I, this is, again, maybe, see, this is why I need to give this talk, because it's just for me. But, like, when you have the things that, like, you want to do because you want to do them your way.
Mom told us in the beginning, yes, let your husband
yes.
do the dishes.
Our mom told us, don't make the same mistake I made and let your husband do the dishes, because she never let her dad do the dishes because she wanted them a certain way and he does not know how to do dishes. But we let our husband do the dishes, and I think they're pretty good at doing the dishes.
He does better than I do.
Actually, someone just...
I can't get my cat.
Yeah, you should do them. I was in a, it was in a training last week with this woman, nothing at all related to Jewish things, but she was saying how her and her husband, like, were very overwhelmed with all their tasks, and they sat down and they took out, like, chart paper, and they made a list of, like, all the things that need to get done, and they, like, redivided it up so that they would have, like, and again, circumstances are different. Some of us are, you know, stay-at-home moms that might have more time for the grocery shopping and our whatever. Everyone's division of labor is different, so I'm not suggesting that everyone, that would work for everyone, but I do think it is important that we rely on our partners certainly for help, and that we don't act too proud to ask for help when we need it, because again, I think that that helps us maintain or preserve the best version of ourselves that we want to be.
This is just, like, very refreshing to hear, because I am a stay-at-home mom, so a lot of times I feel like it's my job, so asking for help, it's like, oh, I'm failing at my job, but I'm very fortunate to, like, have help offered to me, and I do take from people, you know, my in-laws and my parents are here, and my husband helps a lot, and it's not that I ask, it's that he knows, like, okay, you need a hand, that's fine, even if you, like, need a rest for 5 minutes, whatever it is. So for me, just sometimes I feel like, oh, I'm failing if I ask, like, I should be able to do it, I'm a stay-at-home mom, so it's just refreshing to hear that.
But,
like,
stay-at-home moms are so
I think this
is, I'm also stay-at-home mom.
I watch what she does, and
yeah, I'm
I think stay-at-home moms have the hardest job. Yes. In the world.
It's not like 9 to 3.
I've been both, and I can say it's a luxury that I can go to work and go to the bathroom by myself and eat lunch. Even if I'm eating lunch while I'm working, I'm chewing and swallowing my food, and it's a totally different ballgame. So
if your kids are, like, clean,
you have,
like, you're attached to you 24/7.
Stay at mom's home, get all the credit in the world. And I think that you brought up a point that you said, like, your husband, like, even if you don't ask, he knows. I think that that's not a given. I think that, you know, sometimes, like, we just assume that our spouses, like, know what's on our minds or know what we want. And, you know, definitely my husband has said to me more than once in our marriage, like, I'm not a mind reader. I want to help you, but I need to know what you need, you know? And I've definitely learned that I need to be more open and communicative about what I need. If they are mind readers and they know exactly what they want, then kudos to them. But a lot of times I think it's also important, as part of that not being a martyr, is, like, not just expecting them to know, no, but really being open about what our needs are, and that there's no shame in that.
No, also for like stay-at-home moms, I guess it's kind of asking for help, but like just coming together and like I do lunch with Alana, and like I have my other like stay-at-home moms who are there, and like to not lose our minds, because bar the biggest bracha ever, but like you also need to just like have someone else come with their kids, get food, do something, and like just come together for that too. And also having your like friends that you can text, like, oh, whatever, like vent to them and have them be like that safe space, even if it's with this or any struggle, like also fertility stuff you mentioned, like it took me time too. Like have your friends that you can text to understand it, went through fertility stuff, and you can talk to with that. Like have your people.
Know who your people are. Mm-hmm. It's like that idea of it takes a village. It really, mm-hmm. It does.
Not just a play date, it's a mom date.
Yeah.
Like it is an idea.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Think about like, or you know, you've had a hard day or something's going on and you have that friend that you've had a really like either a voice note conversation with or a phone call conversation with, and like how good you feel after that sometimes, right? Like you feel so supported sometimes by having people to just empathize and validate and understand you. It's really important to know who those people are. And you know, there are those people who no matter what, it's always Baruch Hashem, everything's great. And you're like, are they for real? Because it's not always great. And like, I think you really build relationships when you are vulnerable with people about what is actually going on in your life. Brene Brown writes a lot about both empathy and vulnerability. And she has some very good stuff that I would highly recommend. Okay. Oh my gosh, we gotta go on. Okay. Next one. Sorry, but it's such a good conversation. Davening. And, you know, when Georgia said, would she daven shacharis, that's amazing. And I would probably say that a lot of us, me, for myself, finding time to actually daven shacharis every day is really...
It's rush, and I'm hidden in the bedroom, and it's when my husband has the kid, otherwise it's not happening.
Good for you, yeah. For even trying to make it happen.
Exactly.
So what I wanted to think about is davening in a different way, and that's the spontaneous rambling to Hashem. Whenever we want to, wherever we are, just keeping Hashem in our thoughts and in our ongoing inner dialogue, right? Like, got to get it out the door for a carpool. Hashem, please, like, help me just keep it cool while we do this. You know, Hashem, I hope that school goes well for my child today and they're not excluded. Whatever it is, just like we, at this stage in our lives, we don't have to think of davening as a formal shacharis. A davening can just be an open dialogue between us and Hashem all day, all night. And we really learned this idea from Chana. If you remember back to learning Shmuel Aleph and the story of Chana and Eli, and Chana really, really wanted to have kids, right? And her husband said to her, what, aren't I good enough for you? Aren't I better than sons? And that was really the moment where she changed and was like, I got to take this into my own hands because my husband is never going to understand the strong desire that I have to have children. And so Chana went to Davin, and it says about Chana, if you look in source number 6, V'chana hi medaberet aliba. Chana was really praying in her heart. Rak sfateha naot. Only her lips were moving. V'kola lo yishama. But her voice was not heard. V'yechsheva Eli l'shikora. And Eli thought that she was drunk. And so maybe she looked a little crazy. Maybe it wasn't a formal davening in a sitter, but Chana was an example of a woman who wanted something, and she understood the power in davening to Hashem for it. In whatever way she did, however she may have looked doing it, she understood the importance of tefillah. And so I think, you know, we talked about this idea of relying on others and knowing who our people are to ask for help and knowing who our people are to vent to. I think it's really, really important to keep Hashem in the picture and to know that, you know, wherever we might be in our relationship with Hashem, however formal or informal, however close or not close we may feel in any given moment, knowing that we don't have to open a sitter, we don't have to even strongly believe in that moment, but we always have that option. We always have that outlet. We always have the spontaneous ramblings to Hashem that are there for us as an opportunity to connect and to gather strength. And again, like, we all relate in different ways. So I guess the idea is just keeping Hashem in the picture and not feeling that, oh, since I don't have 15 minutes to daven a proper shacharis, like, what's the point at all? There's very much a point, even if it's in our own way, however that might look. There's actually this idea brought down from Yamima Mizrahi. She's like a famous Israeli Rebbetzin. She talks about this idea of midbar, desert, related to midaber, to speak. So in Sefer Shmot, it says, Va'amar Paro l'bnei Yisrael, source number 7, Paro said to b'nei Yisrael, Nevuchim hem ba'eret sagar elehem on midbar. They are astray in the land. B'nei Yisrael are like going like away in the land. The wilderness has closed in on them. Right? This was when B'nai Israel were running away and trying to get out of Mitzrayim, really the parshiot that we're reading about now. And Yamima Mizrahi says that this idea of Midbar can also be thought of as Midaber, as speech closed up on them. When B'nai Israel were in Mitzrayim in Egypt, and also for us, when we found ourselves, we know the idea of Mitzrayim is connected to the word Mitzar, like a narrow strait. When we find ourselves in situations which are challenging, when we feel like we're slaves, I am definitely guilty of saying to my kids sometimes, I am not a slave, right? Like sometimes we feel like we're just doing. So in those moments, we can release ourselves, just like B'nai Israel released themselves from their Mitzrayim. We can release ourselves from whatever narrow straits we feel we're in by opening our mouth, by being midaber, just like they went into the midbar. We as individuals can go into our speaking mode to free ourselves from whatever narrow, constrained period we find ourselves in. So again, just another idea to connect us to the importance and relevance of davening, however that might look. Any thoughts about davening or our connection to davening as busy mothers?
It's good for your kids to hear it also.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know, even if it's something like, I need a parking spot. No! Like, they're taking the car or whatever.
Yeah.
They're like, well, who are you talking to? Like, what was that? And it's just, I think, there's all this program, like, Navi Theme, like, which is in some day schools about just reconnecting, making, like, basically making Torah and Tefillah really applicable to your everyday life. And, like, the biggest concept is, like, we just all have to, like, talk to God more.
Yeah.
And especially if you can do it out loud, if that's comfortable.
Yeah. I love that idea of like modeling for our kids the idea of talking to Hashem.
Need it, so
right.
As well, it can be like
And we know, especially as our kids get older, that they are sponges and they pick up on everything, the good, bad, and everything in between. So it's definitely always an achas moment when I hear a kid say like Baruch Hashem or Be'ezrat Hashem. Like even us incorporating more of Hashem into our language is really something that's passed on. Absolutely. Okay, and the last idea that I want to finish with is the idea that we're talking about maintaining ourselves. And I think that maybe another word we can think of is not maintaining ourselves. Like maintaining is, there's this idea of like kind of staying where we are. But really, I think that when we think of our journeys as mothers, it's a growth opportunity. And I think that if we think of motherhood and the journey of motherhood, whatever stage you're in, as growth and development. And this idea comes from, and I would highly recommend his book. Has anyone heard of Rabbi Shimon Russell? Rabbi Shimon Russell is great. And he just came out with a book called Raising a Loving Family. My mom bought it for both of us. You're welcome to borrow it from either one of us when we're done. Are you done?
No.
Okay. No. Me neither. But you're familiar, or you might have heard of this idea of Tsar Gidul Banim, like the pain of raising children, right? And I'll just quickly orient you to it. It comes from this idea of when Chava had children, right? And she talked about because of the sin from her eating from the apple that it was going to be painful to have kids, this idea of Tsar Gidul Banim. And then Rashi talks about this phrase of Tsar Gidul Banim, right? Which is literally translated as the trouble of rearing children. So Rabbi Russell takes the idea and he says that it's Tsar Kama Gidul Banim, that the effort and the challenges of motherhood brings about our own growth when we use the moments to reflect and develop ourselves. And Rabbi Russell had an incredible journey. He's a therapist, but he has 7 kids. I think 5 of them went like off the derech, not just not from, but like, you know, substance abuse, things like that. And he really talks about the journey he had and how
his
own children and how his children gave him an opportunity to grow. And I think that, you know, the older our kids get and the more challenges they go through, we sometimes see that they are opportunity for us to grow, both as parents and as individuals. And so when we work on ourselves, kind of like this idea of role modeling, talking to God, when we show our children that we're working on ourselves, we're modeling for them how to grow as individuals too. And Rabbi Russell talks about this idea of when we work on improving our kids, like helping grow our kids, we have to look inward first to see what we need to improve about ourselves. Because a lot of times when we're challenged with certain things, it's really us needing to work on certain skills that are hard for us. Patience, tolerance, flexibility, empathy, right? All of those things. Baruch Hashem, our children give us plenty of opportunities to have those skills tested, and they're really opportunities for us to use them for growth. So again, in those moments, you know, the davening, the talking to Hashem, the Baruch Hashem, this is a blessing, it could be worse, and this is a growth opportunity. Rabbi Russell talks about the idea of when faced with challenges, specifically in parenting, he talks about three options that we have. Number one, can't deal. So either that means I'm tagging out, you know, spouse is tagging in, losing our patience, whatever. We know what it looks like when we can't deal with something, right? Number two is to kind of take a detour around the problem, not face it, not deal with it, whatever it is, and eventually come back to it. Or number three, he says, is that we can use whatever obstacle we're facing in our parenting moment to overcome a challenge and grow from the experience. And he says that when we rise to the challenge, we grow as humans, and we can look back and know that with Hashem's help, we really gave it our best shot. And there's this idea that Rabbi Russell talks about in his book that Yaakov was buried in a holy place, right? And the place that Rachel was buried only became holy because she was there, going back to this idea we spoke about before. And he says that the difference between men and women is that men serve Hashem through matters that are already holy. Davening, tefillin, tzitzis, right? Like they're holy things that they're doing because they're already holy. And a woman serves Hashem through everyday activities that she does for others. The spontaneous davening to Hashem for a parking spot, or, you know, cleaning up from our kids and davening that Hashem give us strength to get through the rest of the day. And the Lubavitcher Rebbe, Zichrono Livracha, said that when we do something for the physical well-being of others, it becomes a spiritual act. And I think more than anything, especially when our kids are little, we're very physically involved with our kids. And thinking that those physical offerings that we give to our children, helping them in physical ways, are actually a spiritual act. And when we're doing for others, which I think is the definition of motherhood, we're doing for our children always, every day. Even through all those things we do, those mundane tasks are all for a higher purpose. So really thinking about motherhood as an opportunity for our own growth as individuals is, I think, also really important. And thinking about the idea that we're not only maintaining ourselves and who we want to be, but that hopefully through motherhood, we're using that as a vehicle and as an opportunity to continue to grow into the better, best versions of ourselves that we want to be. Thoughts about that? Okay, it's late. We're all moms that are tired and want to get home to kids. So I'm happy to sit around and talk, but I think that those are kind of the points that I wanted to talk about. Any final thoughts, comments, ideas? What did I forget? There's so much more. These are some ideas. Thank you, everybody. If you don't, you're welcome to take the source sheets or the priorities or give them.